Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to those issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. With screaming headlines about the royals, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry coming to Canada, along with the tragic death of 57 Canadians killed on the Ukrainian passenger plane that crashed in Iraq, it's hard to focus on the rest of parliamentary business in Ottawa. The sudden spike in news comes after a mostly quiet time in politics over the Christmas holidays. Besides the resignation of Conservative Party leader Andrew Scheer, not much has been happening. That is, if you're not a rookie MP. Those who came to the House of Commons for the first time since the election in October faced a laundry list of tasks from setting up constituency offices to learning the procedural rules to finding the washroom closest to their office on the Hill. Today, in my continuing series of conversations with local politicians, we have an interview with our new MP to find out how the transition has gone, as well as talking to him about some important issues facing the country, his riding, and his party. So let's get started. On October 21st, 2019, Conservative candidate Philip Lawrence won the riding of Northumberland Peterborough South. Since then, he has undergone his swearing in, received his orientation, got a new office locally and in Ottawa, spoken in the House of Commons, voted twice, and attended a litany of public events in the riding. And in the middle of all this, it was Christmas and New Year's. With his young family, you can only imagine what that must be like. It makes me tired just thinking about it, how busy it must have been. So I'm pleased to have with me in studio to talk about how it's going and some of the key issues, Philip Lawrence. Welcome, Philip.
Thank you, Rob. Glad to be here.
In early December, you rose in the House of Commons to ask the government when it was going to work on the Ontario climate change. You directly referenced the Made in Ontario climate change. I want to know, what was the reason you decided to talk about that particular question for your first time in the House of Commons?
Yeah, Rob, well, thank you very much. Well, I'm the Made in Ontario Environmental Plan. I'm not sure how many of your listeners they may be aware, but Ontario is actually a national leader in carbon reduction, and they've done it not through taxing, but through their Made in Ontario Plan, which encourages businesses to reduce the amount of carbon output. And so we were asking, and we're not even asking for a yes, we weren't asking for a yes necessarily, we just wanted to know so the people of Ontario and of course the provincial government in Ontario would know whether Canada would accept, whether Prime Minister Trudeau would accept the Made in Ontario plan, which of course is a national leader in carbon reduction.
But was there anything before the government at that time that was being proposed or immediately in front of the House related to climate change policy?
Climate change, of course, Rob, as you know, is a significant issue and a pressing issue. So it's always a matter of discussion. And part of the impact that or the realization I've had is that we see certain parts of it on our news clips. And thankfully, we have great programs like this to give us a little bit longer time to expand. But there's a continual dialogue on issues like climate change, not just in the House, but amongst my colleagues. And really a shout out to all the colleagues that I've had coming in there as a newbie. I've had an opportunity to meet with folks, not just from our party, but actually from the Speech from the Throne, Rob. But I got 20-minute discussion with Finance Minister Bill Morneau. And I have to say, a more collegial, welcoming individual I've never met. And so it's great to have those type of conversations. But climate change will always be at the top of my list of things to talk about.
But I'm not 100% clear. Maybe you could help the listeners also Sure. Understand. Why are you so anxious to have the federal government working with Ontario rather than with all the provinces?
So the way it works is the way they've at that point Minister Freeland said is that we can either have the carbon tax in place or we can give exemptions if in fact you're going to put your own price on carbon. So they already gave an answer to Alberta, in fact a positive one, where they permitted them an exemption on large industry because they've put a price on carbon. Ontario has their own made environmental plan that they've submitted for the same exemption. And so while they've given Alberta an answer, Ontario's still waiting.
So do you have any evidence, though, that the federal government is not working with Ontario?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm altogether in the best position to comment, but what I would say to your viewers is you can certainly see the tone has changed from Prime Minister Trudeau, and admittedly so, but previous to that, it seemed as though that Justin Trudeau talked more about Doug Ford than he did about anything else, right? So.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, if I remember correctly, Ford and Trudeau had a meeting just recently, I think last month, and both of them walked away, big smiles. The Premier was very effusive about how well the meeting went. So what's your concern?
Yeah, so just in... A great question there. So we have seen a change in tone. There's a notable exception I'd like to talk about. I'll get back to that. But what we really need, and I was actually able to speak four times, Rob, in the House of Commons, and one of the issues that I talked about in a 10-minute speech was about productivity and about significant economic challenges. And why I'm circling back to your point is tone won't change that. Canada is a laggard amongst productivity. Unfortunately, we're in the bottom quartile of the top 20 economies in productivity. We need major changes in the economy. We need to reduce the deficit. We need to reduce taxes, reduce red tape. And while I tip my hat to Prime Minister Trudeau and his change of tone, it seems like he's taking the responsibility a little bit more seriously than he did earlier. We need more than tone. We need real change. And we need change that'll get this economy rolling.
Well, I'd just like to come back to the Made in Ontario plan because, yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of concern raised. I mean, York Region has been very vocal about Ontario government changes affecting the Green Belt and the Oak Ridges Moraine. The Green Belt, of course, is the Class A protected farmlands, and the Oak Ridges Moraine, of course, is environmentally very, very important for all our water supply for most of us in southern Ontario. So there's been talk. I mean, there was a piece in the CBC in September where they talked that the Ford government was holding talks to convert a 60-hectare portion of the Oak Ridges into housing. Now, you know, I mean, I appreciate your point around the economy, and you know, we want to see development take place, but how do we balance that with environment? And yet you're promoting this plan that seems to be schizophrenic around environmental issues.
So I think I will comment on the Oak Ridge Moraine, but I mean, these are two separate things, right? We have the reduction in carbon plan, and then we have the land use planning. But getting back to the land use planning, which I'm more than happy to talk about, and the word you said is absolutely correct, Rob. It's balance. And we need to strike a balance. And I actually live on the Oak Ridges Moraine. My property backs out on our last couple acres are on it. So I understand it. It's a beautiful part of the country. But we need to be able to strike a balance. So I'll give you an example. So stepping out from or being derived from the Oak Ridges Moraine's legislation and the protection is the environmental protection, which is then it's put into place or implemented by the municipalities. I have a ditch that has water rub across my property for maybe 3 days a year if we've got a lot of rain during that particular year. They want to environmentally protect, Rob, 300 feet back from that. And it's not reasonable. There's no watershed. There's no real environmental reason for it. So to me, that's unreasonable. That being said, I live on a beautiful piece of property. I live in a beautiful community. Of course, we need to have protections there. I don't want a factory going up next to my house. I don't think many of the folks want that. And we just need to have a reasonable balance and have an open discussion about that where we need development. We have a housing crisis here in Northumberland, less than 1% occupancy available here. And so we need to do things like build houses, but we need to do it in a reasonable, sensible way.
You know, you mentioned the fact that the federal government's been talking to Alberta and Saskatchewan, and they've had very successful talks around the carbon tax, and they've tied it in with technology, which I think you spoke to in the House. Isn't that sufficient to address your concerns about balancing economy, economics, and environmentalism? I mean, isn't that what we're really talking about there when we say, let's develop new technologies, let's be innovative, let's be creative, let's be entrepreneurial, and at the same time, we can be sustainable and economically sensitive, or environmentally sensitive. Sorry.
Well, you're certainly you're preaching to the choir, as it were, on that, Rob. I'm one of the major causes I want to get behind as a member of Parliament for Northumberland, most importantly, but also for our country, is to drive innovation. And as I talked about in my speech, and Rob, probably over the next 4 years or maybe less, you're going to get a little bit tired of me talking about that. But we need to enhance our productivity in our country. Like I said, productivity is mentioned in GDP per hour contributed per worker. We have countries like Ireland over $80 an hour. We're down at 50. The U.S. is at 65. And the wages are almost directly in line with that. And so a big driver of productivity is, of course, innovation. And so I'm going to do everything we can. We've got, I was just over, we have a lot of great people and a lot of great businesses and a great lot of government institutions here in Northumberland. I was just over at Venture 13. They have some fantastic incubators there for entrepreneurs. And so as your MP, I'm going to be supporting those things. I'm also going to be trying to cut taxes, cut that red tape, and push innovation any way we can, because we need to increase productivity, because that increases wages, makes life more affordable, and makes life better.
You say you want to support things like Venture 13. One of the things about having a member of parliament that's a member of the government is that funds tend to flow a little more freely. Are you concerned at all about being able to deliver dollars as well as verbal support to things like Venture 13?
Yeah, so I've been in office now for about 3 months. I've been able to talk to no less than 10 different Liberal cabinet ministers. And so I'm out there and I'm talking to them. And so far, you know what, I have to tip my hat to them as well. They've been open and willing. And I talked to Marion Monsiv's office, right? And Marion, as well as myself, were quite partisan individuals. But her office, as soon as I talked to them, said, you know what, we put that at the door. We just want to help your residents. So I'll give a shout out to Marion's office. Fantastic. And they're working right now to hopefully help us get us some more funding for institutions like Cornerstone that help abused women. And clearly, whether you're a Liberal, Conservative, NDP, this is a cause we can all get behind. And like I said, a public shout out to Miriam's office and how supportive they've been.
You also rose in the House recently, I think it was in the last month, to talk about rising water levels. And you pledged to continue to push for action. Why, of all the issues facing Northumberland, Peterborough South, did you pick this issue to advocate? I mean, we're in an opioid epidemic, homelessness. You talked already about affordable housing. Our farmers are facing a new trade deal, the United States-Mexican-Canada agreement, that's going to hit our dairy farmers and others. There's a lot of issues you could have stood and talked about.
Yeah, and I have actually all those issues I have talked about in the House. I've been a little bit of a mic hog, Rob, but I'm not going to be shy when it comes to representing the people in Northumberland. I've risen no less than 4 times, which I think for a backbencher opposition might lead the way. But the reason why I do believe the shoreline is a very important issue is it's something that's really impacting people. I've driven and I've walked most of the shoreline of our wonderful riding, and you see people and you think sometimes, unfortunately, the public image, and even our former MP actually put this in an email, that it was a bunch of millionaires, and I couldn't say that's further from the truth. There are a lot of people on fixed incomes down by the shoreline. These are not all wealthy people. These are people who, if the water is as high as it was in 2019 and repeated in 2020, may very well lose their only asset they have, their house. There's often not insurance or any protection for these folks, and so their very lives, financial lives, are at stake. And it's also not completely controllable, but it's something we can have a direct impact on at the IJC. There's a dam that controls the amount of water that comes in and out.
Well, I understand just in the last couple of weeks there's been talk that the IJC is opening up the floodgates as long as the St. Lawrence isn't frozen to try and drain some of the water out of Lake Ontario.
Yeah, so it's a complicated issue, Rob, and a technical one at that.
Yeah.
But the
Well, without getting too deep into the weeds, because that can get a bit confusing.
Yeah.
I mean, do you support their action to help drain the lake in the next couple of weeks?
So, if you can forgive me with this, I just want to give a little bit of context.
Sure. Okay? No, that's fine.
So, every year actually they increase the flow rates at about this time. That's because the shipping industry, right? So there is always it's always a balance of stakeholders. So the last thing I want your listeners to think that I'm saying is we just need to open the floodgates and because at the end. Other end of the floodgates, there's Montreal, there's the shipping industry, which contributes millions of dollars. Right now, I do believe there is an imbalance. The high water is being disproportionately allocated to Lake Ontario, which is disproportionately affecting our residents, and that's why we want to reduce it. So yes, I support that. I would also continue to push the IJC to the maximum of where we're not impacting other stakeholders or minimally affecting other stakeholders. We need to increase flow rates in order so that the spring is not a disaster and a nightmare for the residents of Northumberland and Peterborough South who happen to be on the shoreline.
Okay. You mentioned earlier when you were talking before that you've stood in the House and you've talked about the opioids epidemic, you've talked about homelessness and about farmers. When I searched the Hansard, I saw the number of times that you spoke, and I didn't see where you stood and talked about the opioid epidemic and what you want to see done. We have a very, very serious problem. In Belleville, the police chief has called for a national task force. Our own chief has backed that call. Where do you stand on a national task force to address the situation with opioids in our community?
Yeah, so opioids are an incredibly serious issue, and I'm going to be sitting down before I leave for Ottawa in a week with our police chief, and he's going to brief me on where we are on the opioid epidemic. It's not a simple thing. So. Any time we can get together, we can talk about it, and we can put a public face to it, we need to do that. So I'm going to support any type of discussion. So national task force, otherwise, anytime we can put shine the light on it. I've told this story, I'm sure, a number of times, but you know, just having an office, our campaign office was downtown, and just you would see it on a nightly basis, the impact it's having, and just like the flooding isn't something that just affects rich people. The opioid crisis is hitting us all across our society. It doesn't matter whether you're in the nicest house in Coburg or whether you're in subsidized housing. It is affecting us all, and it's something we need to get the whole community behind. Ultimately, I do believe the solution is getting people not on opioids, and if they're on them, getting them off. And anything we can do to help those folks. Perhaps not an entirely conservative thing. I do believe that the solution is not arresting people out of this. I don't want illegal drugs decriminalized, but I believe it is through therapy and having our entire community reaching out and getting people off of these abusive opioids.
Well, all that's fascinating. I appreciate very much. Unfortunately, we're just going to have to stop and take a break for some commercials. I feel like we get momentum and we've got to stop. But I'm going to do that. So I'm talking with Northumberland Peterborough South MP Philip Lawrence. We're talking about what's been going on in Ottawa, in the riding, and inside his party. Please stay tuned to consider this on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you are listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. I'm with Northumberland Peterborough South MP Philip Lawrence. A really big issue since you arrived was the resignation of your party leader, Andrew Scheer. You put up on your social media a statement. I just want to read it if I can. I would like to thank Andrew Scheer for his exceptional service as the leader of the Conservative Party and Her Majesty's loyal opposition. Under Andrew's leadership, we have made significant strides for Canada and the party. Personally, I would not be where I am today without him. that is a particularly personal and a deep message on your part when you say, I would not be where I am today without him. Can you share with us some of the ways that he was so influential?
Yeah, so I guess I would start out with more generic, and then I'll get back to the personal there. I just thought that, and perhaps in all fairness, it didn't resonate through Canada, and certainly not through the 416. But in 905, Andrew Scheer's message did resonate. We were able to have Andrew Scheer in. Sorry, I hesitate to say Andrew Scheer, and I have to apologize because in the House of Commons, you're not allowed to say the name of the individual. And I actually got chastised, but anyways, for saying his name. So Andrew's message did resonate here in Northumberland, Peterborough South. I know that from knocking close to 40,000 doors. And so I don't think we would have won this election without, I would not have been a member of parliament without Andrew. And that was part of the message. But the more important part, the personal side is I had the ability, I had the option or the opportunity to talk to Andrew. The part that people don't see and it's part, it doesn't come across on TV is what a warm and personal guy he is. So the story I told actually in the House of Commons was he was out for an event with us, and I've got a 6-year-old son by the name of JT, and of course Andrew's got a large family as well. And so in these political events, JT's like my right hand man. He always is like right there. We've had a unique bond since he was born. So sometimes at these political events, I have to go away from him to speak or whatever, to talk to other people. And that upset James, and so James was kind of upset. And so who goes over to him? No other person than Andrew Scheer. Andrew comes over, talks to him. He grabs him by the arm and brings me over, and we each grab my arm. We start swinging him. Before that, you know what? He's smiling. He's happy. And so Andrew was really, he showed me also the way with having 5 kids that he's been able to be the youngest Speaker of the House, be the Member of Parliament, and ultimately, now resigning, run for election. So really, in a lot of ways, I admire and I aspire to the way that he's been able to balance his life.
After the election, how involved were you with the debates within the party over Andrew Scheer's future?
You know, I'll be quite frank here, and one of the pundits, and I'm going to try, and Rob, you can hold me to this, one of the national pundits said, Canadian politicians, they all in all, we need to get off our talking points a little bit and be a little bit more freer. So I'm going to try to do that wherever I can. And so with respect to this, and this one's easy for me because as a newcomer, I almost felt like a little bit like the child in there. And so I didn't really get into those discussions. And quite frankly, I was glad not to. I supported Andrew all the way through. And in fact, when we had the caucus meeting, when he resigned, I was as shocked, and I think most folks were, just gauging by what I saw across the room. And so we were all quite surprised that Andrew resigned.
So did you have any of the party officials or any of the your fellow politicians coming up to you and lobbying you in any way, shape, or form? So,
no, after is a different story, and we can talk about that, Rob. But before, no, there were just round standing applause for Andrew and a lot of sad faces when Andrew decided to resign.
How did you learn about the resignation?
We were in caucus meeting, so we had the caucus meeting, it was a caucus meeting to discuss NAFTA, and then towards the end of it, Andrew got up to speak. I looked back, and there was Jill Scheer, Andrew's wife, and at that point, I knew what was probably happening, but that was the first I had
known. And what was your reaction in that moment? Like, what went through you?
Yeah, you know, it's really shock, right? Like anytime any of those big issues that happen, like not that this is any way equivalent, but I remember where I was for September 11th and the feeling that you get of surprise or various things that happen through your development, and you're just sort of sitting there, wow, this is really happening, right? And so as I said in my social media, I was disappointed. I think Andrew did a fine job, but unlike Jagmeet Singh, which saw half his caucus disappear. Prime Minister Trudeau, which saw his majority evaporate, we actually increased the amount of seats, and I thought Andrew Scheer did a fine job, and I thought he would have made a great prime minister.
When you found about the school tuition for Scheer's children, what was your reaction at that time?
Yeah, I really just want to know more. I'll be completely open, and like I said, my commitment, Rob, is to be open, and that's what my thoughts were. I did sort of go to the place where I come from a corporate environment, and so when I've been moved a couple times in my career, and so just in those type of situations, they do large corporations, they want to make sure that in your new job you're successful. It's not in any ways to make you wealthier, but it's to put you in the same position you were before. So I don't have all the facts, Rob, so I'd be remiss to comment too deeply, but at this point my comments would sort of stay the same, is that I want to know more.
Now, when you are in Ottawa, are you concerned at all that about the party as it moves forward into the new year being without a leader for the next 6 months? I mean, do you think there are opportunities in the House or outside it where the Conservatives are missing out because they have an interim leader?
Well, Andrew is still our leader, and he's not even interim. It's just he won't resign until we have appointed a new leader. And I believe that the caucus is behind Andrew. Eventually he will resign. But in addition to that, we have a real strong, experienced caucus, and I don't think we're going to miss a beat.
So I know there's a lot of new rules the party has set out for the leadership race, limits on the number of candidates, or at least they're trying to limit the number of candidates through the rules. 17 ran in 2017.
You worried me there, Rob. I thought there was a rule I missed.
Sorry. No, the purpose of the rules, though, is to try and limit the number of candidates because they had 17 that ran in 2017. Now they're talking about $300,000 to register as a candidate compared to $100,000 before, mm-hmm. And you need 3,000 signatures from across the country. It's very, very specific, and they say 30 ridings across 7 provinces, and they've got to get this done by March 25th. Very tight deadline in political terms. How do you feel about those limitations that they put in place?
I am completely and totally supportive of that for a number of reasons. One is that I do believe it's a good thing to have not a limited number of participants, and maybe we'll still get 10 or 15 people. I don't know, Rob, but I would prefer to see a number like 5, where if we have an hour debate, each person has 10, 15 minutes of that hour debate, as opposed to having a field of 15 where we have 2 or 3 minute sound bites. And I said, as I said earlier, Rob, it's great to have programs like this where we can actually express ourselves fully. And then secondly, what I would say is this is meant to be in some ways a proxy for the eventual election. And what will you have to do in the election? Well, one of the things is not just as an election, but also governing, we're going to have to bring this country together. So we need support from across the country, and a lot of it. And the $300,000, it's not one millionaire striking a check. The limit of contributing $1,625 per person still applies in that. So that means that you're going to have to get, and it's not always, and there are lots of folks who unfortunately could not afford a $1,600 check, but in some ways that's proxy for the amount of support you're going to give to that individual. So you're going to have to get people to commit from across the country, their time, their hours, and financially, and to me it's a great proxy for what you're going to have to do in the actual election.
So what are you looking for then in a new leader? Are you looking for somebody that's fiscally conservative?
I'm looking for first and foremost for the person that will best help me represent the people of Northumberland, Peterborough South. And so there are a number of key issues, one of which I've talked about is the productivity piece, right? If in fact we can get our economy, we can get our workforce, which is the best in the world, to be more productive, that's something that will push the wages up, that will make life more affordable for Canadians. We are also a predominantly agricultural riding, and so that's going to be key. I want someone who's going to protect supply, manage it, someone who's going to open up the trade in China again for our canola and for other objects. And we're also predominantly seniors, and so I want someone who I feel as though will protect those folks who are a little bit older than you, Rob. So we want to make sure that we protect those people.
What about the views on socially conservative issues? Because I know that was something that was heavily debated when the review of Scheer's leadership was going on. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah. So my first and foremost, like I said, actually this comes from Andrew when he talked a little bit about his leadership. If we took a whiteboard, Rob, and amongst, we're a big tent party in the Conservatives, and we said, these are the issues we all agree upon, these are the issues we don't, I want to focus on the issues that we agree upon. Right, and so they'll certainly. I will be endorsing a leadership candidate in the next week or so, and happy to give you the heads up on that and your listeners as soon as I can make that public. There will be no litmus test on the social issues. I want the person who, when we look at those issues that we agree upon, such as getting the economy rolling, phasing out the deficit, reducing taxes, reducing rent. The individual that I believe will best be able to do that, the one that will be able to protect agriculture, make sure our seniors are front and center, that's the person that I'm going to get behind.
Now, you had the support of the campaign life over the election. Do you think the candidates running for leadership need to take an anti-abortion stand during the race and carry it forward into the party's platform?
No. Like I said, we want to focus, Rob, on those issues that we all agree upon, right? So I'm not going to have a litmus test for my own endorsement, whether they're pro-life or pro-choice.
So then let's talk about the riding. You've been, the last couple of weeks, you've been around and you've been talking to people, I'm sure, and I'm sure leadership has been part of the conversations. What are you hearing from the people you're talking to? What are they looking for from a leader?
Yeah, I guess the first and foremost thing, Rob, is there's excitement, right? We had our annual general meeting earlier this week, actually on Tuesday, and so the AGM is meant to be sort of more of a technical thing, but you get a bunch of, and I think we had probably 80 people there or so, you get a bunch of politically minded people and what's going to happen, a discussion of politics, right? And we had folks who were talking about Pierre Poilievre, about Aaron O'Toole, Peter McKay. Of course, Peter's officially in, and I believe Aaron as well, and I'm sure Pierre will be in as well, but all passionately, excitedly talking about that. And the message I gave to them is, and to your listeners as well, those who might be members, and I'll just take a quick discretion. If you want to have a say in the leadership race, you just go to conservative.ca, you sign up for a membership, and voila, you can vote.
And that was a free ad on behalf of the Conservative Party.
Exactly.
There you go. Thank you.
But getting back to discussion was just a lot of passion and excitement. So.
Now, we, as you mentioned, there are McKay's in, Gladue is in, Aaron O'Toole, I know, who is in Durham right next door, is looking at it, and you've mentioned a number of other people. Anybody pique your interest right at this point?
You know what? Like I said, I will actually in a week's time come out and endorse, but I would say that of some of the folks who are out there, Aaron O'Toole, I think Aaron would be a tremendous leader. Aaron, of course, has a great background, lawyer, military. Just for anyone who knows him, he just has a presence about him. And so I'm a big fan of Aaron O'Toole. I think he would be a great choice. Peter McKay as well. Peter came down, helped us in our campaign. Peter was actually, I was a teenager, I believe. I can't quite get the dates because I didn't write it down back then. I wasn't so good at note-taking in my teenage years. But Peter was actually the first politician I ever saw speak in live and in person, and was just absolutely blown away. And Peter might actually, Peter is one of the reasons why I got into politics. And so so a big fan of Peter McKay. And then Pierre Poilievre, I think he's got an amazing track record. I think 6 elections, a real fighter, perhaps the most articulate spokesperson for conservatives and free markets and economics. So those would be some of the three, and as well, Marilyn Gladue, very well accomplished, terrific engineer, real professional, and also a shout out to, she was the warmest and kindest of all of the members of Parliament when I, as a newbie, came in there. Almost literally took me by the hand and said, this is what we need to get done. She's got a great persona in addition to being an extremely accomplished professional woman.
You're becoming a very good politician. I noticed how you hit all of them just equally. So I guess we'll have to wait for that announcement. From a writing perspective, though, do you plan to play a role in organizing and garnering support for a particular candidate?
I will, yeah. I will. You'll see me give an official endorsement, and I'll be part of that team. That being said, I want to say to all your listeners and those who decide to join up or are already members of our party, I will not put any pressure on any of them whatsoever. I will tell them why I'm supporting a particular candidate, but I think if they choose any of the candidates, I fully support them, and there's not a bad choice to be had.
I'm going to shift gears now, and I want to talk a little bit from a more personal from your more personal perspective. I look at in researching for today's interview, and all I could think of is you must be exhausted. I mean, we're not even 3 months since you won, and there has been so much happening. So how are you finding it physically? I mean, all the stuff you've done, you've been stood in the House, and I appreciate when you say, you know, for a backbencher this early, this many times is unusual. I appreciate that. But also, I mean, traveling back and forth to Ottawa, you've had the Santa Claus parades and all the writing stuff, and then you're all over, it seems. How are you finding it physically?
Yeah, so first of all, concern from the media, Rob. That's we appreciate that. That was a fun. That was a funny, Rob. But no, it's actually. I've always been one of those folks, and it's. I think I'm just blessed with it that I've been able to go pretty hard my whole life. If I had a nickel for everyone who's ever expressed concern about how hard I was working, I'd be a wealthy man. But I'm just blessed. But most importantly is I've got a great support system. My wife, Natasha, is absolutely spectacular, and she's actually joined you. She's working in the college system as well. She's an OT working as an instructor for Fleming College. So she started a new job. The ones I worry about the most are my kids. And so I was able to, while we were out of session over Christmas, take every single opportunity. Anyone who ever wants to see me, you'll see me at the Orono Arena every Saturday and Sunday with the hockey with our kids. And as I've told my chief of staff, Greg, that time's sacrosanct. We don't touch our Orono Arena time. And so we try to balance it the best we can. I'm here to work, and I'm here to make an impact.
I appreciate that. But at the same time, I mean, realistically, anybody that's been busy knows that there are places where sacrifices in your life have to be made. Is this having an impact on your family life? Are you seeing your kids as much as you were seeing them before you got into politics? Are you seeing your wife as often?
In all candor, eventually it'll start changing as we go back into session. I'm in Ottawa 3 out of 4 weeks. In this first half, it's actually been a little bit nice because my former life is in the corporate world, and we would have end of year stuff, and so I would actually put as many hours in now as I did then, but my mind would often be distracted because we had certain goals that we had to hit at the end of the year, and it was really quite high pressure stuff, while it was certainly time consuming going to the 28 Remembrance Day events in our community, I didn't attend all 28, I should be clear on that, but there were 28, and we had members of our team at all 28, the 9 Santa Claus parades. I was able to do that with our family, and I really enjoy that, to be honest, Rob. Although an introvert, I just enjoy the interaction with everyone, and also, I mean, it's a little bit of a honeymoon period, honestly. And I'm in opposition, I'm newly elected, and I think of probably the thousands and thousands of people I interacted with over 3 months, I can think of one negative interaction, and even that one wasn't really that negative.
Well, last thing before we end, I can only imagine what a big moment it was to take your seat in the House of Commons. Can you just tell us briefly what it was like that first time when you went and you sat in your desk and there you were?
Yeah, it was magical, really. I mean, I'll be completely open with you. When I sat down and I sort of looked up and looked at the speaker there, even though he's on the other side, you look across and there's the Prime Minister, right? And then you see in front of you, you've got Aaron O'Toole, you've got people who are like, for political nerds like me, Rob, they're like celebrities. Like for normal people, like football players and baseball players, these are, and just being in there, and just the comment that kept rolling over in my head, and one of our former MPs who lives in who told it to me, is like, Philip, you know what? You may be a small piece, but now you're a part of Canadian history. And that kept rolling over my head, and it was just exciting and a magical moment, really was.
So I have to ask this. Did you take a selfie?
No. We were told that we're not allowed to now. I did see on social media of nearly every other newbie, but I'm a Canadian to the end, Rob, and so I'm like ultra rule follower. On top of that, being a lawyer, I just couldn't do it. But anyways, yeah.
Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for coming in today. I hope this is the first of many conversations we'll be having.
Absolutely, Rob. Enjoy it, and love your format. Love the ability to have a little bit more than sound bites.
Thank you very much. And I want to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. I would also like to thank all of you who continue to write thoughtful, caring, and insightful comments to my social media. Social media is not always a good place to debate issues, yet I am grateful to those who demonstrate that you can still have intelligent, considered, and caring discussions online. So thank you. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This, or if you are on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. If you'd like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this.